Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
I want to welcome you today to Blog Talk Radio with another exciting episode of Unmasked. The author is Terry E. Lyle. This show is informative, entertaining, sometimes off the chain, but that's only because authoress Terry E. Lyle is passionate about what she does. So sit back, relax, enjoy the show, get that phone handy so you can call in with questions or comments. She loves to hear from you. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, for another Friday with authoress Terry E. Lau and Shalunda. And that tune was What I Want to Hear by Brian O'Neill. Now, I'm a little out of breath because, I had to get the stupid dog in the house. We're getting ready, lightning and thunder. So if we cut out with the power, then Shalunda, run with it because you got Tony on the air. So, you know, I just want to say hi to everybody that's here. Let me catch my breath. All my listeners from north to south, east to west, thank you for spending another Friday evening with us. You didn't have to be here, but you decided to be here. And I also want to thank Tony Anthony out of Baltimore, Maryland, because Tony, bless his heart, he held the fort down with me when Shalonda's fiance was in the hospital, and I appreciate him doing that. And I also want to just say hi to everybody who's listening via the iPods, computers, whatever way that you use to listen to the show. But it's going to be a show that you're going to say, oh, my Lord, because the guest we got on here today is Darlene King. This lady, bless her heart, still got a sense of humor, still holding together. But she was married to a preacher who had HIV. Now, you know, bad as it is, you know, her ex-husband, he was whoring around. We just going to call a spade. And after he gave his wife HIV, he kept spreading his sperm all over the place and infecting other people. Now, come on now. Who does that and then get up on top of the pulpit and preach how we need to get our life in check? Oh, my goodness. So it is what it is, but this woman has not lost her faith in God. She did not blame God like a lot of people do when things go wrong in their life. She just, you know, girded up her loins, holding it down, and she's now spreading the word with more zeal than normal, you know, so she's doing what she needs to do, and I praise God for her, and I thank her for having the ability to put herself out there on Front Street and share her story, because this is not an easy story, because Quasis Cap had someone had given me HIV, and I knew about it, and I slept with them. You know, I might be doing time today, because I would try to take that sucker out of Quasis Cap. But anyway, without further ado, let me say hi to Darlene. How you doing, baby?
Hello. Thank you so much, Sister Terry, for having
I'm
me
sorry,
on
baby.
Your
you
show.
Are stronger than most women. I know you're stronger than me because it couldn't be me. And Shalunda, what do you say about that, darling?
First, I'd like to say hello. Thank everybody for their prayers. Everything worked out fine. Thank you, Lord, and didn't have any had to have any procedures done. But I would, I'd probably be in jail right now. I had a friend that went through a similar situation, and, I mean, I admire her because I'd have lost my mind. I really would have. But
yeah,
just
so she can get
a
class
me.
On how to be
I need
strong
work.
When you're going. So because I'm weak, I would still been in the world. Favorite friend would have been some crazy glue, because I swear I would have glued his penis to his stomach and his eyelids shut, and I would have beat the living. You know the way I'm going with that. He wouldn't be talking about it. They'd be having him in an operating room trying to peel some skin off. But it is what it is. But we just going to go back a little bit further. And Darlene, tell me what your childhood life was like before you met up with your ex-husband.
Well, my ex-husband was in my life since my childhood, so I guess I'd have to talk about my childhood before age 12, because we grew up together. And yeah, we've known each other. They had known each other since we were about 12 years old. He was my brother's friend, grew up in the same neighborhood, and one of your typical old West Philadelphia neighborhoods where all the neighbors know everybody, and the kids, we just played right outside in front of the house, up and down the street, like that block was our playground, and it was just a block full of children. And he lived around the corner on the block over one, you know, down the 100 and over one block, and he was my brother's friend, and I was kind of, you know, like hung with my brothers because our ages, there were 9 children, but I come in between 2 brothers, so I'm the youngest girl, and I have one brother that's younger than me, and I'm in between these 2 brothers, so I was closer in age to them, so I played more with them than I did with my sisters. Like my sisters, it was more like when they had me when I was in that age range of 5 and 6 and 7, they felt like it was more a burden. You know how your mom makes you take your little sister, you know, like you go to the store, take your sister with you. So they would drag me everywhere, you know, I had to go. And I would be like, Mom, I don't want to go with them, you know.
But
so
you know,
I just played. I had fun. I had a wonderful childhood.
Darling, I just want to jump in here for the benefit of people who don't really understand what it's like on the East Coast, up near the Philadelphia, Baltimore area, and so forth. Where we live at up there, we had row houses. Now, I'm in the country now, so, you know, it's a few acres between a house. So you're right. That's how the dynamics was.
Yes, because it is. It's row houses, so it's
block,
all the houses are
block.
Connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can chastise you, can tell on you, can spank
that's
you,
it.
And then
yes.
if that happened, your parents will
yes.
say, well, let me know. But, you know, for people all over the place, they had row houses, so that's how it was for me growing up as well.
Yeah, it's row houses. And like you said, like today, you know, people say, I wish somebody would put their hands on my child, please. All of them adults on that block could spank me up and down that block. If they wanted
and then, you know, after
and
they
guess
spank
what?
You.
Then you get the house and Mom and Dad would spank you all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
By the time you mess up, you'd be spanked by everybody.
But you know,
but
something
you know,
helped us because, like they say, it takes a village to raise a child. With that in mind, we knew that we wasn't going to show up around certain neighbors because we knew they were going to tell my mother. You know, we knew she was going to find out before the day was over. The phone was going to ring. Somebody going to call somebody else. And, you know, might as well just go in the house, take your pants down and wait because you're going to get it. You're going to tear it up.
No, in our case, you might as well just get two doors down. Miss Summers had the branches with the switch. You
the
might
switch.
As well go
Ooh,
to Miss Summers'
God.
House, go ahead and tear your branch off of the switch, and don't come bringing back no little teeny one because you're going right back to Miss Summers' house to get a nice big one, and you might as well go ahead and get your branch, pull the leaves off of it, and
Ooh,
just sit beside the bed and just wait and wait your punishment because that's exactly what was going to happen because my mother would say, go to Miss Summers' house and get a branch.
my grandmother had one in the yard. You just walk down the yard. We used to hide up under the curio cabinet because we were that little. We would hide up under the curio cabinet because we knew she couldn't reach us over there. But she would just sit at the end of the dining room table over on Grantley Street, Terry. Sit at the dining room table and wait for us to come.
Well, you know,
we
were going
to
get
you. You had to come in sooner or later. You were going to get it.
Yeah, I thought I was slick, right? You know, so, you know, knowing me, you know, I knew I'm going to get my tail whipped, so I try to be creative. I went and got a plate and put it down my pants, you know, figuring that, you know, go ahead and beat me. I ain't going to feel nothing. But, you know, it is what it is. My mother knew her daughter's butt wasn't shaped like a circle, so I got tore up. But, Chalonda, go handle this baby. I got delivery at my door.
Oh, but, you know, just thinking about what the two of you were just saying, you know, like what you would do to him. It's, I guess for me, it's different because of the way things unfolded.
Okay.
You know, some people hear this story. I need to first tell your listeners two things. When you hear the title, HIV Infected by Our Cheating Pastor Husband, A Wife's Courageous True Story of Betrayal, Survival, and Forgiveness, the first thing they need to understand is that I am the her in the title. The title is basically stating what it was. I can't get mad over the HIV because at the time I tested positive and confronted him, and we all had to get tested because I found out by giving blood to the Red Cross. And at my job, where I worked at work for, I worked for almost 30 years in benefits administration through several companies. And we always gave, this particular job I was at, we always had blood drives, and I always gave blood. My blood type was O negative, so it was always, you know, oh, when we come, make sure you give. That's a universal blood type.
Right.
We need you to come, and I came every single time. This particular year, I give blood, and in January 1991, I get this letter saying my blood tested positive. And so that's where everything started, and it was like contact everyone that you've been with. And now at this point, I had already been married and divorced, so I had to contact him, and I had to contact my children's father because the two of us had no children together. And he already had children with someone else. I already had two children. And that, when I say that the way it unfolded, everything was a lie. From that moment, from the moment I opened my mouth, everything was a lie. So it's hard to get angry when everything that you believe is not what it is. It's a lie. Because I told him.
Well, you know, darling, let me ask you this. You was with your ex-husband since y'all was 12.
As boyfriend and girlfriend.
Well, on
over years.
Okay. So how long did you get married? Were you married before you took that test at the blood drive and found out you was infected?
No, we found out we were positive, and he convinced me to get married based on a lie.
Oh, so that's what you had got divorced, and you was divorced.
No, I was previously married. So in 1991, when I got the test, I had to contact everyone. And when I say everyone, I'm talking three people. I'm talking my children's father and him because he had been my boyfriend. And because we started dating again, that we went to middle school together, we went to high school together, and we started dating at the 10-year high school reunion. This is the period in which we contracted HIV. I'm almost positive. It was the
80s. But don't that seem kind of weird to you that, you know, after you found out you was between marriages, that you were infected, that you wanted to get married to him? Didn't that seem kind of strange?
No, it did not seem strange to me at the time because some people, they can't understand it. But when you think of it in terms of how it happened and what I'm being told, and I told him, you know, I said, you know, I got this test, and the blood is tested positive. Now, at this point, everyone has to be tested. The children's father and him, he has to be tested. But this is where the lie was. The moment that I told him that I had, that the Red Cross tested the blood tested positive, at that moment, he knew he was positive. He knew of at least two other women that he had infected and were positive. And he chose at that moment, instead of being honest and saying, I'm already positive, he chose to lie and say, I'll get tested, but it doesn't matter what the test is. You know, I love you. I've always loved you. You're the love of my life. I've never loved anyone like I love you. I'm talking to you as if I'm him. And you're thinking you're already devastated, that the most devastating news that you can possibly hear. And my initial reaction was no, because we broke up and we weren't together at that point because he had cheated. Now, keep in mind, everything that I'm basing my feelings on is the fact that, yes, I know that he had cheated, but did I know he had cheated and had sex with hundreds of women already at this point in his life? At this point in our life, you have probably already had sex with any and everyone and hundreds of women. No, I didn't know that. I'm processing in hindsight. After years, after getting married, after finding out through so many different people, so many things that he said, which was a lie. But and finding out that everything that you, your whole marriage was all based on a lie. Your everything that you did with this individual was based on a lie. Your hopes and your dreams, and when you have someone saying to you, we're going to be there for one another, we're going to take care of one another, it doesn't matter. And then at this point, now as the weeks go on, the children's father is tested, their test is negative, and he claims, I took the test and the test was positive. So now
I know
that he's the individual because they're negative. He's positive. There's no one else to test.
Right.
He couldn't test anyone. So I was like, well, you know, the other two people who he was in a relationship with, he already knew, he already said that they were positive. So now we know where the source
is. Hey, we got to take a little commercial break.
Okay.
I want you to hold that thought, Darlene, and when you come back, I'll let my co-host ask a question. I know she has one. But for the people out there listening, call in the 347-945-6003. It's obvious that we have a lot of questions for Darlene because one statement she makes make you have another question, and we're going to try to get all the questions answered. So, Darlene, wow, you got a story that is horrific, and the way you chose to rise above it is inspirational at best. So with that being said, we're going to take a small little break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the New Kajama, where inspiration and transformation meet. We'd love it if you drop by and have some tea and crumpets with us. Now serving in the Kajama Parlor, click on the Teapot Oracle and choose a lovely calorie-free pastry to reveal your special tarot card message from Spirit. Next, wander over to the library where you can relax and browse Kajama's weekly edition for spiritual articles, your inspirational message for the day, advice columns and more. Interested in a particular subject? Kajama's library has a vast collection of spiritual articles and archives. In need of spiritual guidance? We've got the crystal ball all set up in the sitting room where our gifted psychics are ready to provide the answers to your most pressing questions. Climb the grand staircase to the third floor balcony where you can stargaze and read your daily horoscope written by our renowned astrologer, Susan Blair Hunt. Once you've completed your tour, take the back stairs down to the chambermaid's kitchen where we've gathered together a collection of spiritual recipes and divine confections to empower you on your journey of enlightenment in our spiritual toolbox. Thanks for visiting Kajama's lovely spiritual estate, and don't be a stranger. Feel free to drop in any time, grab a cup of tea, and make yourself at home. Kajama.com, come for inspiration, stay for transformation.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello?
Hey, it's Mike.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Oh, yeah, everything's good. Just been really busy. Sorry I haven't been here this week.
Yeah.
I forgot, but I will be there this week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey man, I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own God. For things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen it.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day.
No! Who is this? Why is he in my house?
Who are you, man?
Is this your mom?
Who are you? Mother, this is my woman and this is my house!
Oh, hush. My girlfriend.
Why is he in this house? What do you mean you didn't know?
When the secret is no longer hidden. You have now been exposed. Written by authoress Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle and Shalanda. And our guest today is Darlene King. She is sharing her story how she was married to a minister who gave her HIV and kept on infecting people. But if you got a question for our guest, call 347-945-6003. And I want to say hi to everybody that's tuning in tonight with us. And that first advertisement was Kajama.com, and I want to say hi to my friend Susan Blair Hunt. And that song was James Brown, Try Me. And I want to say hi to Privette Lynch. I want to say hi to, again, my fill-in co-host, Tony Anthony. My goodness, this young man, he is held down the fort. You know, he was there when I needed him, when Shalanda had to stay at the house with her fiancé. We appreciate him filling in and stepping up. And I also want to say hi to my friend Halsey in Baltimore, my mom, for tuning in, and for all these other listeners that I don't recognize their phone number. But a special hello to Kelly and Buster out of Nebraska for tuning in. And Gail, I see that she's hanging in with us as well. But we will get back to our guest, Darlene. And Darlene, before the break, Shalanda had a question. I'm going to let her ask her question first. And for anyone out there, if you got a question, hit the number 1 on your keypad. That will let me know that you have a question. Your hand is up. Dial 347-945-6003. And if by some chance this is the last time you hear my voice, it's because the thunderstorms are hitting bad down here in Alabama. If I go off the grid, then Shalanda going to take you the rest of the way home. But I hope, hopefully I won't lose the signal, but it is rough down here. But Shalanda, go ahead and ask Darlene your question.
Yes. Ms. Darlene, when you found out you had HIV, you said that you and the guy had broken up. Was that
yes.
the case?
And
yes. then you found out that he was positive. How did you all get to marriage from that point? Because at that point, I don't think I would be mentally sane enough to move forward with a marriage with him.
Oh, no,
okay.
That's right.
So it's easy to, like, when you have all the facts and you have the truth years later to be able to say what I would not do. Because if I had all the information that I had after the marriage was over, I probably would not have gotten married either. But you have
well,
to remember.
Well, let me ask this question. Maybe I'm just shallow. Do you think that the reason why you decided to go with him is not because of the kind words and how sweetly he was all up in your ear? Was it maybe somewhere in your brain, like, dang, I'm a young woman, man. I like having my little romantic episodes. So if I'm infected and he infected, and I know he gave it to me, at least if I'm with him, I can still have sex. Now I'm just going to get down to nitty gritty. Could that have been a factor
get down
as
to
well?
The nitty gritty. But no, I'm telling you from my heart, I'm a hopeless romantic.
Okay.
I believe he knew that. We've already been in a relationship. Like I said, this is someone who I've knew already for years at this point in our life. And we were friends. And even when I was married to someone else, we were still friends. This was somebody from my neighborhood. You know, you just have somebody that you're cool with. And we were always just good friends. And we weren't, and when once we broke up and we were no longer in a relationship, we were still good friends. You know, some people break up and I can't stand that person.
Found it out, darling. Well, we wouldn't have been friends no more because I'd be trying to get him a beat down or get somebody rip him a new butt. You know, I'm sorry.
We weren't enemies.
What the hell? Oh my God, I got a death sentence over my head.
And that's how you perceive it. In the beginning, that's exactly how you perceive it. So there was no reason for me to believe that all the things that he was saying were a lie. There was no indication that it was a lie. I had nothing to base that what you're saying out of your mouth is not what you truly feel in your heart. I'm believing exactly what you're saying, and I'm taking you at your word. And I'm taking you at your word, and as I'm revealing my feelings are coming from my heart, and I'm believing that you're taking me for my word. And also, you have to realize sometimes how you perceive things and what your desires are, and when someone's talking to you as if they're on the same page and they have the same goals and the same morals and the same values and the
get
same thoughts, and you're believing that, yes, well, they're thinking just like I'm thinking. And so the thought process, which is what he is saying to me, is we're going to be there for one another. We need to take care of one another. If you're sick, I'm going to take care of you. If I'm sick, you're going to be there to take care of me. We have to make sure we make plans for our children, that our children are taken care of. You're saying all the right things. And, you know, people say, well, you knew he was a cheater. Yes, I did. When we were in a relationship, we broke up because he cheated. Now, I only knew of one cheating incident. If we were in a relationship, I found out about this incident where he cheated with someone else, and we broke up. And that was the end of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I knew at that moment that he was not just a cheater, but an habitual cheater, that he had cheated with hundreds and hundreds of people. At that moment, I did not know that. But years later, yes, I did come to learn that not only did he cheat on me when we were dating before when he contracted this disease, but that he has always cheated his entire life. It was never a point where he was faithful to anybody that I have learned over the years, that there was
You're
never
so nice
a faithful
how you talk about him,
moment.
Even after what he did, you know, he was a damn gigolo.
So,
you know, I hate to say that, but, you know, He
but
was
you don't
no
know
good.
That
you know, he was
trifling.
You know, darling, I understand because you're a woman of God that you're trying to use nice adjectives. But, you know, I have a hard time moving past that because what he did to you is not like saying, oh, honey, I'm late for our date. You know, he knew what he did to you. And as he did that, he continued to lie. And then after he lied, he continued standing on that pulpit after he found out. Who does stuff like that? How are you going to be up on the
pulpit? I agree, Terry. Because now at the point, you have to remember this is all unfolding over years.
Uh-huh.
This didn't all unfold at the moment that I made the decision to say yes. Because my initial response to getting married was no. I was like, I don't want to make a decision based on emotions. I'm like too emotional. It's too much stuff happening. And yes, him having cheated on me in my understanding, because I only know the one incident, having cheated that one time before, yes, that rang in my head. But my thought process was, well, now that HIV is in the picture, cheating is over. That's over and it's done with. I'm thinking like I would think as an individual. I'm thinking there's no way I would cheat with anybody with HIV.
Exactly.
So you're thinking that way. So you feel like, well, the person that I'm with, especially the person that I would ever choose to marry and have as a partner, they're going to think the same way. But that's not necessarily the case. But you don't know that. Because even if I had said, now that, you know, you're infected, would you ever cheat again? I even asked that question. You know, we talked about cheating. I would never cheat.
No, darling.
Never
no, baby. I won't do that.
And even over the years, every time he got caught cheating, I'm like, you have HIV. What are you thinking? What are you doing? I'll never do it again. It was always, I'll never do it again. And because I have left and come back, left, come back, through this whole marriage, left and came back, believing when you come back, when I come back, the whole lie, it's never going to happen again. It was so stupid of me. I don't know what I was thinking. And you just choose to believe, I guess I chose to believe that someone else's heart and feelings and thoughts would be as your own. For me, it's inconceivable to cheat. It's inconceivable to purposely infect people. It's inconceivable to me. I wouldn't even think, I would not only not think that I would marry someone that would do that. I don't even think I know anybody that would do that. At least in my mindset today, where I am today, even in my life, now that was 1991, so we're talking 24 years. Even 24 years later, I don't believe that there's any person, I'm not in a relationship. As a matter of fact, I haven't been in a relationship since I stopped having sex with my husband in 2003, and I have no intentions of ever being in one again. But I don't even know anybody in my circle of friends that I believe would ever do that. It's inconceivable to me. And sometimes things that are inconceivable to you, you believe that they're inconceivable to the people that are around you, that you associate with. Like you say to yourself, I would never murder. You would think, well, my circle of friends would never murder, but that's what it amounts to. You are actually giving a potential death sentence to someone else because even though, yes, now we know there are medications, there's this and that, the person does not know. So if you don't tell them, you're giving them a disease that's going to lay dormant in their system or be active in their system and actively deteriorate in their body from the inside out. And if they don't take the time to get tested, which is why I'm so big on get tested, if they never take the time to get tested because they don't think that there is a reason for them to have been tested, it's slowly deteriorating them. And it's not until you get sick and you end up in the hospital that a lot of people find out, because they never took
darling.
The time to get tested.
Okay, we're going to need you to take a breath, because we have
okay.
a couple of on here that want to ask you a question.
Okay.
I see that Shalonda has a question, my co-host.
Okay.
I see that Gail has a question, and I see that Tony in Baltimore has a question. So, ladies first, we're going to start with Shalonda. She's been holding on the longest with a question.
Yes, Shalonda.
Just to follow up to my question earlier, I know you said you're a hopeless romantic, and maybe it's just my demeanor in life, but I'm just still not. I'm sorry to keep going back, but I'm just trying to understand. You know, trying to look at it from a different point of view than my own. And but you know, I seem like I feel it just like it's. I'm jumping around here, but where do you muster up the faith, the forgiveness? Because it is murder in a sense. You see what I'm saying? And it's not necessarily saying, because like I said, I have a girlfriend who's had HIV for well over 10 years now, and she lives healthy every day. So not necessarily a fatal blow physically, but a fatal blow spiritually, a fatal blow mentally to you. You know, how could
sexually.
I just can't see where I could forgive that. Where, how long did it take for you to get through that process, to actually process the information that you had HIV?
It actually did not take long, because
really?
It was a process of us continuously talking daily to get to the point where we made that choice to say, now, keep in mind, I'm believing I have a partner now that's on the same page with me. And the commitment and the goal at that point is to not only to live a faithful life, and a faithful life with just the two of us, but to focus on our children and our lives and whatever time that God's going to bless us with, doing the best that we can for our family, for our children, and making the best of our lives for whatever time that life may be. Because you have to remember, in the early 90s, yes, it was looked at as a death sentence. So the focus was, we're going to be there for one another to support our children. We can't
right,
change what has happened. What has happened
you can't.
Has happened.
You, right, and you really... can I say something real quick? I'm sorry.
Sure.
You're right. You can't change what has happened. But my thing is, the disrespect of a man that I felt loved me and I loved him, to know the information that he had HIV and to give it to me is the worst thing that you could ever do. You know, I mean, a cheater is going to always be a cheater. And I mean, I've been married before, and I've forgiven my husband for cheating on me one time, because first time, shame on you, second time, shame on me. So second time
Absolutely.
It went around, that was it. But, I mean, I could understand forgiving the cheat. I can't understand forgiving, altering my life forever to the point where I would be able to say I love you unconditionally and I love you till death do us part.
Okay.
I just
have
really struggled to see that.
Facing us, because I couldn't forgive it either. I'd be trying to find
right.
somebody to bust myself
okay.
out of his head.
Can we?
I got a lot of people who got questions. So
yeah.
All right, but I do
real...
need to clarify something so
okay.
Shalonda can be on the same page with us.
Okay.
Right.
You have to understand, see, and this is where you got to keep up with the story. At that moment when I am making this decision, I do not know that at the moment that I said something, he knew. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're finding out at the same time I'm finding out.
Oh, so you
you're
mean to tell me he
out.
Never thought anything was wrong? His only thing is lying to you about just messing around with other women. That's the only thing he was trying to embrace, that he was just cheating?
His thought was he didn't know until I said something.
So
and then he got tested, and that's the point in which we knew.
Okay, but, you know, even
wow.
so, He might not have known that he was infected,
but he knew
he was a man of the cloth.
He wasn't a minister or pastor then.
Relationship and married to you. He knew that he was up on the pulpit trying to preach to other people about how to get
together.
So
now you're
together.
Going years down the road.
So now we're years down the road.
So at that point, now you do know. Because
right.
at the
okay.
moment
well, anyway,
in which we got married,
Gail got a question,
it's
and
like,
we got Tony got a question next. So I'm going to let Gail just ask her question.
But before we move on to the next question, Shalonda, do you understand what I'm saying?
At this point, it's like two people finding out something at the same time.
And you're
right.
saying, what are we going to do now
right.
at this moment?
I feel it'd be
where
the
do
best,
we go from here?
Right.
Because this is what you're believing. You're believing. You're believing. You're together on the same page. That
okay,
we're,
he
this
moves
is
out.
This
when
is
you
a
want
new
to find
knowledge
out next,
to both of
here.
Us at the same time.
Okay,
okay.
This is what I
that's
about
what you're
you.
Believing.
We found out
when
that
you
we
make
both
that decision.
Infected, and we knew that he gave it to me. If we're living together, okay, get your bag, get the hell out. And then I'll figure out what I
no,
need to do.
No, we weren't living together.
Okay, well, get out
we
of my face while I figure
time.
This out. No. So, okay, Gail got a question.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Hello, everybody. This is Gail.
Hi, Gail.
You had mentioned early in the conversation that you had your children's father tested as well.
Yes.
Okay, so that...
It was negative.
Okay, but you was in a relationship with him as well as your husband, I mean the pastor, before he became a pastor. Were you
yes.
having sex with both of them?
No, not at the same time. I'm talking about after my divorce. We used to date after I was divorced.
Okay,
we started dating at our 10-year high school reunion, and at that point, we were at my divorce. I was divorced by then.
Okay, so he had infected you before he became a minister?
Yes.
Okay, so when you found out that, because I also heard you mention that he was a habitual cheater, and you knew this.
No,
what?
I did not know that on the date in which I found out and the date we made the decision to move forward and get married. Like I've been explaining to, that's why I understand why everyone is saying, well, how could you? Because you have to realize that all of the things that you find out about somebody is just about everything you're reading, I found out in hindsight. And majority of it, I found out after I left for good.
So I
found out that he knew the day I told him after I left in 2003.
So how long was you with him after you found out that you were infected?
We were married for 12 years.
This was after
we
you
were
found
married,
out you were infected?
After, we got married that next year, and... we were married for 12 years.
So you found out before you got married that you was infected and you went on with the marriage. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
He played the part as if he just found out too, as if it was a
but
surprise.
But we both
everybody.
Found out at the same time. That
okay,
was the perception. That was the
belief. Remember at the job, she was donating blood, then she got a letter back in January saying you need to come in, and then she shared that with him because she had to notify everyone else who she might have slept with. And then after he found out, he said, well, I'm still here for you. So they got married and stayed together 12 years. So I'm going to go to Tony, let Tony ask his question.
I haven't finished my question. So after you found all this out, but it seems to me like he was trying to bypass the fact that he had it. So he knew that he had it.
Yes, he did. Did I know that he knew? No. But, yes, he knew. He knew.
Wow.
Yes. But when I found out that he knew, by then the divorce was over. We were separated.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe I'm sorry, the divorce wasn't over. The marriage was over when I found out that he knew.
Wow. Well, to me, you know.
After I left, And even up to he died of AIDS in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into someone last year that told me a story, which is not in the book.
Can you hold that? Because my other guests who have a question, it might tie all in to what you're getting ready to say.
Okay.
All right. Tony, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, my question to you, darling, is knowing that this fella, when you found out, you know, not saying when you didn't know, but once you initially found out that he knew, why was he lying? I don't understand it, because I don't think I would have lied on no circumstances.
We're on the same
because
page,
you
darling.
Believe that you have a partner that's on the same page with you, that believes the same things that you believe, that has the same thought process that you have, that you understand this has happened, and it happened when we were dating, and it's nothing that you can change. So you make a commitment, and what you believe is a commitment between two people, that you are now going to take the life that God has given you and live it to be your best self that you can for your children while you have an opportunity. While
you're
here,
I'm going to do
all.
His brother wasn't a committer. He wasn't a committer. He wasn't committed to nothing. But everybody knows, but you.
But
so what are you talking about?
It would have been very nice to know that in 1991, but when you find that out in 2003, 12 years later, it's easy to make a decision on something you find out 12, 13 years, and at this point now, 24 years later, that you could, if you had all those details, and if you had a crystal ball of all that's going to transpire now over the next 24 years, all laid out in front of you, and the pattern that unfolded over your 24-year lifespan of dealing with this. If you had that folded out in front of you, you would have most, without uncertainty, you would have made a decision and said no, because I see everything that's going to happen from now till 2014, and my answer is no.
Well, darling,
you don't see it. And when you believe what you believe, and you believe what's being said is the truth, and you say, I'm making a commitment, because marriage is a commitment, and it's a commitment to say, I am committed to this individual for the rest of my life, and they are committed to me for the rest of their lives. And together, we're going to fight with all of our might, with everything we have, with just the two of us, and battle together on one accord as a team, intertwined as one. That's what you
believe
you have as a partner.
Like me,
and that's what everybody believes they have as a partner when you get married. Even when you're getting married and HIV is not in the picture. When you're making
right,
a decision.
But let me say this. You said that you're romantic. What I see from what you're saying is nothing but love. And they say love is blind. I know, God forbid I ever been in that circumstance, but I know that if I had known this person about since I was 12 and further on, if I had liked his looks and he was pleasing to the eye and he was a smooth talker, because he had to be to get the rest of them women in bed. He had to be kind of smooth talker. You know, if I'd known all these things and then I know that he affected me, I'm sure that once I got over being angry from being infected, I would say, well, okay, well, you know, he ain't a bad-looking brother. You know, I'm all messed
But you don't
up.
Know all those things, Terry. That's just it. You don't
know
all
those. You said
you
knew him since you were 12, right?
I guess. And everything
okay,
that
like
I
said,
knew,
love is blind. You know,
everything that I knew
had to be
was
a
person a
nice job,
who was a
in
kind
a way because y'all
friend.
Still communicated. He was
that's,
able
that's
to get in
saying.
Your ear.
For that's
you
what
to,
she's saying. After
everything
all of this
I knew
angriness
was a kind
everything.
Friend, kind, respectful,
that's
loving
what I'm saying. I'm saying
friend.
The same. That's what
that's
I'm
what
saying.
Saying.
I'm saying after all of that, you know, I would have took in consideration, okay, wow, I've known this guy this amount of time. This guy is a smooth talker. He's saying the things that I want to hear. And he has to be a smooth talker because he got these other ladies in the bed that you found about later. But just dealing with you, once you found out that you was infected, also would have been part of my equation was that, okay, I'm infected. I'm pissed off. Okay, I'm going to move past this, but he is also infected. So I think that, you know, okay, he's not a bad guy. He got caught up. I don't know how he caught it, but I got it now. So together, maybe we could build something because we both have that same bomb, ticking time bomb, that we got to deal with because no one, I don't care who infected him or not, I don't think that no one wants to feel like this is it. Whatever age they are, they become celibate because I think and I personally believe that a lot of people who are infected are purposely going out there infecting other people so it can become the norm because closets kept, you ain't going to go to nobody and say, hey, I got HIV, let's have some sex. It ain't going to happen. So a lot of people are angry when they get caught and they infect other people. But I felt like, you know, that since you already knew this brother, you know, he was easy on the eyes. He was saying the right things in your ears at the reunion. So you probably felt like you're not on that, you know, you say you're a romantic. How come part of that equation wasn't that, okay, well, I feel something for this guy. He ain't bad, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, mistakes happen, you know, and maybe, you know, I don't have to resign myself to being celibate from this point on because he's infected like me. Is that one of your truths or because that's something that you have never really you said everything else but that. Was that one of your truths?
Okay. I wouldn't say that was my truth in the sense and the way what you're saying. Well, two things you said. One of the things you just said that you believe a lot of people are have contracted this disease and as a result of it, they're going out infecting other people. I do not believe that there is a lot. I believe that there are some that have that mindset. But I believe that there are, I choose to believe the better in people. I choose that there are, to believe that there are more people like myself who refuse to not only infect people, but I'm hoping before our conversation is over that we talk about how other people can be of a danger to us bring into our system. So I refuse at this point in my life to allow anybody to deposit any STD anywhere near me. So that's not a choice to say because I'm choosing to be celibate. I choose to be celibate for several reasons, but we'll go back to the celibacy. What
okay,
I'm saying
and,
to you
and,
is
and that's
it's
okay.
easy,
I mean, you're
it's
entitled
easy to say what we wouldn't do when you have all the facts, but it's
right.
It's not so easy to say what you wouldn't do when what is presented in front of you, you believe 100%. So what I'm saying to you is before he was my husband, he was my friend. He wasn't just in some friend that I just met a couple of days ago. He was someone that I love very, very much. At that
that's
point, when we were in a relationship,
I loved him.
When I married him,
I loved him.
And
that's
even,
what I said. I said love is blind. Because you loved him, you said you were
and
a romantic.
Even at the end, when I was able to forgive him and pray for him, I loved him as a soul that's on this earth, but not love as in an intimate way as a husband. But I was still able to love him unconditionally as God would love him and pray for him and pray that God would deliver him from drugs, deliver him from the cheating, deliver him from all the demons that were clearly destroying him that he wasn't able to see. And, yes, I even chose to believe over the years. I said my prayer constantly was, he's going to see it. He's going to see that everything that he's doing is tearing down the fabric and the structure of what we have, and he's going to wake up. He's going to come to that realization, and he's going to turn around, and he's going to say, you know what? I have been foolish, and what I'm doing is foolish, and I have so much to live for. I have children to live for, and I am going to do something different.
Let me ask you this question, darling. Say, for instance, you didn't find out that you had HIV. Did you ever find out he was cheating before you found out you had HIV? And if, in fact, you found out that he was cheating before
when we were dating,
you found out you had HIV, why did you keep him?
Yes, I found out. So we were dating. We started dating at the high school reunion. We were in a relationship, a serious relationship. We were even talking about marriage then, and I found out he cheated, and we broke up. So at the point when I got the result, we were broken up at that time, and I had to contact him, and I contacted him. And that's when we began to talk again.
Okay.
And that's when
okay,
we began
now.
To talk and make plans for the future, just two people.
Okay.
You not this host of people who end up becoming a part of this circle of history, but just two people
okay.
was only
you
supposed to be a part.
You forgave him for having HIV and give you that death sentence, you know, but why couldn't you forgive him for the cheating before you found out you had HIV? I mean, you said all this dog
I did.
And
I did. I had to forgive him in order to come back. Yes, I did.
I'm not talking about coming back. Once he cheated on you and y'all was talking about possibly getting married at the reunion, okay, how come you had to find out that you had HIV before you was willing to talk to him? But see, because like when he cheated, why couldn't you have that godliness about you then and that love for him then and take him back
because
before you knew you had HIV?
Because of the way the incident, this cheating incident, had occurred, and because it was so blatant and so disrespectful, the incident, and I don't want to involve family members that have passed away, so I'm not going to go into the whole story, but I'll just say it was such a blatant act of total disrespect. And it infuriated me. It infuriated me to the point that I said no. I said no.
So he screwed around with a family member, cousin or whatever. Okay, but let me say this.
No, it wasn't a family member. It was just someone off the street. It was just someone off the street. Someone he had no idea that he knew. Just picked up off the street in the middle of the night.
Okay, even if he picked up this random female. Maybe it's me. Maybe I need more work with me. But in my eyesight, I find it hard that you could be so blatantly forgiving to someone who gave you HIV. But because he met some little prostitute or whore or some random chick on the street, that was so devastating to you that all these virtues you had for him once you had that HIV, you didn't have the same virtue for him when he just picked up a random chick.
Because time heals all wounds. You want me to explain my heart and how I am? It was time.
No, well, I
needed
guess I'm
time.
Just curious.
You know,
but,
at the moment that you're see, I guess it's because you're looking at like one thing happened, and then within another week something else happened, but it was several years, and then this happened. So now time, of course, has already dissipated because since that incident, the incident in which we broke up, we had run into each other, I'm going to say, a good 20, 30 times. We didn't begin dating again, but we became friends again.
Okay,
do you understand? So this is someone who, even though we broke up and was no longer boyfriend and girlfriend, he still was my friend. Even when we weren't dating, he was still my friend. And I was able to forgive him for that incident. It was done. It was over. And we moved on, and we were able to remain friends.
Okay, I see that Gail and my co-host got another question. I'm going to let Sharonda ask a question first, and then Gail. But then let me take a break after Gail asks her question. But Sharonda, ask your question first, darling.
Okay, so I want to move beyond the reasoning of why people do what they do. You know, people have their own insight on what they want in life. And if they don't, to me, the way I see it is if you don't sit and listen and wait for guidance, these are the things that we get ourselves into. And it's hard to get out of, and I'm not immune to it. Like I said, I'm going through a divorce right now, and it was the worst decision I ever made in my life, but it was also a fast decision that I made. And it, like you said, hindsight is 20/20 in it. I seen the signs. I loved him to death, but I seen the signs. And when I look back, the only person I can blame is myself, because I did see the signs that I didn't want to pay attention to. But I wanted to know, as after you all got married and he became a minister, at what point in the relationship did you find out that he was still sleeping with women and spreading this disease?
While he was a minister, once he became a pastor, it never stopped. When I found out, at this point, he's a minister, and one of the kids, they have a little friend that spins, they play together on the little peewee basketball team, so the little kid would come over on the weekends and spend the weekends with us. They play games on Saturday. He spend the weekend, and then Sunday mornings we all go to church, and then when church was over on Sunday, we would take him home. And this pretty much went on for about 2 months during their little basketball season. And this particular weekend we took the little boy home. And so after church, went to church Sunday, took him home. And we pulled up, and his mom came out to get him out the car. And so she's just standing at the window talking to my husband. And she's not saying anything out of the way or anything like, you know, disrespectful or anything. They're just talking and talking about the weekend, the kids, the games, what the kids did. And I'm just watching her entire demeanor, and I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at
body language.
And I said to myself, now all the kids are in the car, and at this point now we have 5 children because we have another baby that was born on our first wedding anniversary. So at this point now we have 5. And I'm looking, and I said, he is sleeping with this baby mother. But I'm saying all this in my head because I'm not saying anything while the children in the car. I never said anything around the kids. They know now, of course. They're all older, but they didn't know then. And then I said, no, he doesn't have me babysitting on the weekends while he's with this woman. And it was easy for him to do a lot of the stuff he did because he worked nights and weekends. So to say I got to work this weekend was nothing out of the ordinary. This is part of your regular schedule because he does work nights and weekends. So if you say, you know, I got to work this weekend, it's no problem. You know, you work that night. If you say you're going that night and you're going to work, I don't question whether or not you're going to work. That's your schedule, nights, weekends. If you say, I got to work this weekend, I don't question. But it became clear as I'm sitting there, and I said, he has me babysitting while he's sleeping with this boy mother. Now in my head, I'm stomping, I'm screaming. Yes, in my head, I'm cursing. All of this is going through my head, and I am totally infuriated. I think if a person's head could literally explode, that would have been a head-exploding moment. And I still can't say a word. All the children are there. I finally get home, and I get them to myself, and I said, you are sleeping with that baby's mother. And he denied it up and down. I said, I'm telling you, you're sleeping with that boy's mother. And he would not admit it. He denied it 2 days later. It might have been the next day. Days and times, they've all just all merged together now. But she called me and she said, well, I'm sorry, you know, that you had to find out that way, this way, but we're going to be together, and he's leaving you for me, and I just think that it's better that you know now, and we didn't mean for this to happen. And she's just going on in a cute little pretty voice, and she's just talking, and I'm just sitting on the phone, and I'm listening, because she's not the first one that called me. I done got calls from tons over the years. And I just wait, and I listen, and I wait till she finishes. And when she finished, I said, well, sweetie, did he tell you that he has HIV? And the phone went silent. She didn't say anything.
Wow.
And I'm saying it, and I'm talking in, like, the same tone that I'm talking in.
Are you using now?
Because this point, she don't know that I have probably talked to, at this point, you know, who knows, 15, 20 women over the phone over the years at this point when she calls, so she don't even know that she's, you know, that Tyler Perry show where the woman calls the girl number 9, she don't even know she's number 20. She could have been 20, 21. I don't even know what her number was. At a point, I stopped counting. And when she didn't say anything, I said, well, I'm going to presume from your silence that he didn't tell you.
Well, darling, real quick, I'm going to let Gail ask her question, and we need to take a break. But when we come back off of the break, the question that I have for you is, if this woman was number 20, 50, or whatever the number was, why did you stay? Because you gave me this big rundown why you loved him when you knew he was infected with HIV. Okay, how do a person get stepped on so many times after, first of all, getting that HIV report, and then I still marry you, and then you have all these chicks on the side, and they're calling the house, talking stuff to me, and la, 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 la. I mean,
and
how do you
sit
say
back
that?
And you choose to believe it, and you choose to believe it's nothing but Satan trying to destroy our marriage. And so many people, like now over the years, everybody want to blame Satan. I agree with you 100%.
Ooh, Lord.
But you sit back and you just lie after lie, and you choose to believe the lie. Like you said, I have the signs. And that was another moment where I picked up, packed up, left, you know, and only for him to come and convince me to turn around and come back. But, yeah, you do. You believe.
Okay,
Dale,
ask your question because we need to take a small break.
Okay.
I'm just listening. I'm just listening, darling. You can go on and take the break.
Okay.
All right. Tony, do you have a question before I go to break?
No, I don't have any more questions.
You left us all speechless.
I didn't get to the best part yet, so you go ahead and take a break.
God,
and then I'll get to the best part of that conversation.
There's more than that.
Because it wasn't
that was
the end of the conversation.
Oh,
welcome back to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle and Shalonda. And our special guest today is Darlene. She has HIV that she had received from her husband, who was a preacher, who couldn't stop cheating on her. Now, you know, the ones that have heard the show so far, Darlene said that she have known this person since she was about 12 and on and off and stuff like that. And because of the love, the agape love that she had for this person, that, you know, after he told her that don't worry about things going to be all right, when she found out that he had HIV, she then went and married him. And she said her reasoning was because he was saying he was going to be there to comfort each other. Now, God need to work on me a whole lot more because I ain't there yet. And as quiet as kept, had it been me, when I first found out this guy had HIV, if I didn't do it, I would be getting somebody to bust him upside his head. But just in case, if I would have fell for the okey-doke and married him and then find out that he's cheating nonstop, that the cheating got to the point where the women could be numbered like 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth, like the have and the have-nots, the movie by Tyler Perry, ain't no way. At some point, God need to work on me because my heart ain't there. That's the first time you cheat. I know I got HIV. The first time you cheat, I got something for you. Pow, pow. I might be doing time. But, you know, that's right. Just me. I'm sorry to say that's just me. I thank God that we got people out there like Ms. Darlene who is more loving and forgiving because I haven't grown that much yet. I'm just telling the truth. I ain't grown that much. And I pity the fool that I might decide to sleep with down the road. Give me anything except a good time feeling. We're going to go toe-to-toe. But let's get back to the show. And I know that Shalonda got a question. And anybody who got a question, call 347-945-6003 and hit the 1 key. And I wanted to be known, first of all, I respect my guest for being here. And I know it might seem that I'm hard on her, but I'm not really trying to be, but I'm asking those questions that the listeners want to know because they don't know Darlene from nothing. So they got these questions. They're in the chat room, and they got these questions, and they're saying these things, and I'm just asking the questions for them. So I hope I'm not offending my guests, but people just want to know. And, I'm trying to ask their questions, but from my perspective, God needs to work with me a whole lot more because I ain't there yet. Well, go ahead and ask Darlene your question, honey.
Okay.
Ms. Darlene, before we went to the break, you said that you have a child together. Correct?
No, we don't have any children together.
Okay.
He had a child by somebody else that was born on our first wedding anniversary.
Wait a minute. Hold up. He had a child by somebody else?
Yes.
That was born on you all's first wedding anniversary.
Exactly.
Which meant that he cheated with you like
three months
in. after you all got married.
Yes. 3 months in. 3 months in, which means you didn't really start 3 months in, which means
it had to be going on before y'all got married.
Which means you never really stopped.
Right.
I ain't trying to be nasty,
but did anybody that you know that was somebody who had love for you, like a relative, female or male, did anybody say, damn, darling, are you stupid?
Well, they have said a whole lot over the years, but one thing, like your reaction, Terry, is, you know, knock them upside the head and beat them up.
It is. I'm sorry.
Slice them, dice them.
Oh, there you go.
A lot of the things that happened over the years, I did not tell myself. Like I said, I come from a family of nine. So
there were nine children.
Two have passed on. And right now there's about 40-something grands and great-grands. And, you know, a lot of the grands are older. I'm 54. So a lot of the grands, they're like in their 40s. So I'm not talking little kids. I'm talking adults.
Right.
So when the book came out, at that point he had passed away. So it's probably was only God's mercy and grace that he had passed away, because there's no telling what my family or children would have done if he was still living. I even have friends of our family that reacted just like Terry, that called my sister and said, they all call me Di, so they said, you know, she brought the book and she read it and she said, I can't believe that y'all let him do that to Di. Where is he at? Let's go get him.
That's right. I'll be right there with your family.
And my sister said, well, he's dead. And so she said, he's dead. And you know, so I have people that are still coming to me, you know. My sisters were infuriated with me for not telling them.
But I know my family.
And I wasn't interested in a physical fight, a physical war. I wasn't interested in anybody trying to kill him. I wasn't, you're not worth going to jail over. You know, you're not. First of all, I guess I'm at a different place, and I know it's hard for people to understand, but now I'm at a place in 2014 where I have no shadow of a doubt in my mind that all things have worked together for the good, for them that love God and all the called according to his purpose. Every single degrading, spiteful, mean, ugly, drugs, the cheating, the lying.
The drugs, what you mean the drugs?
I'm talking about the drugs when we were young adults. That's all in the book. Terry, I don't know why. So I thought you had read my book. I don't know why. I thought I had sent you one. Maybe I didn't.
No, you didn't. I'm waiting.
Okay. Well, inbox me your address.
Okay.
And I do need to get some more. So just give me a minute and I will.
Okay.
I'll get it to you. Because you need to read it. So just like the whole period of our drug use as young adults, you know, same thing that everybody went through, you know, high school and after high school, that whole period, you know, I did it all with him. So if every single thing today, now that I am preaching and speaking and going out and helping women, I am able to minister to them from a place of experience. And people can minister to others without having to go through what the person has gone through. There's no question in my mind about that. But I believe that everything was supposed to happen just as it has happened, and I'm here for a reason. And the reason that I'm here is to not be silent. To share my story, to tell my story, even as horrible as it is, so that not one other individual will have to go through the same horrible things I've gone through, so that everyone will hear it and go get tested, so that everyone will know that in this day and age, you cannot, if you're going to be sexually active, be sexually active and not use condoms, so that everyone will say, well, wait a minute. I didn't ask for all this to come in my direction, but it came in my direction. Yes, I have gone through the why me's, but the why me's are over. They're over for me. I'm in a good space. I'm in a good place. So now my purpose is to help other people. And I had to go through all that to really be able to effectively help other people. Now, I'm not saying that God's going to have everybody go through every single thing to help other people. But for me, I believe my purpose is now in helping other people go through the same things that I have had to go through and being able to minister to them. And that's
well,
what I'm
darling,
being used
I,
for
I believe
on a daily
that.
Basis.
You know, when people hear your story, they can also see the sincerity behind your words, because a person can say they got something, but if you're living it like you're living it, I'm sure you could do that. And I don't want to sound wrong. I need to be more tactful where I say stuff, but I'm going to say this. You know, thank God it was you and not me, because I'm sorry. I would have been like your family members, you know, and like a friend had just said to me, He said that I would wait and gave him some sleeping pills and cut his balls off. You know, that sounded like a good choice, too. But, you know, I'm glad it didn't happen to me. I'm not glad you caught it. I'm not saying that. But I know that I would not have the peacefulness in the way you can share your story, because I'd still be volatile. You know, I'd be an angry black woman, you know.
I'm not. And the thing is, I am so at peace with things that it even scares me sometimes, because there's just so much joy. I guess it's because God just has allowed me to see. First of all, I'm just too over the moon thankful that I'm still here. So
Amen.
That in itself is for me, it's just a blessing and a miracle. Because in 1991, you know, once I was married, then all the stuff started happening. And you do get to a point, like, well, within months of being married, you really come to the understanding that all that stuff that was being said before you got married was a lie. So, you know, reality smacks you the moment someone else is pregnant that, okay, all that stuff you said was a lie. But then you say, okay, I'm married. We're in counseling. Okay, I'm doing what the counselor says. I'm trying to be focused. I'm trying to stay in it. But then things keep going on, so you leave. And then he's
mm-hmm.
able to convince me to come back. And then we're back. I'm back. And then everything seems fine. Seems like everything is smooth. And then we're right back in that same situation again. And this just process just repeats itself over the years. And I never recognized the emotional abuse. I never recognized the verbal abuse by the different things that were said over the years. But physical abuse is something that you recognize. Now, being coming from a family of nine, you're not going to hit on me. So there is, you know, as much as some people hear the story and they say, oh, well, that woman was stupid. That was stupid. I would never do this. There's a lot of things we would say we would never do when we don't know all, because when you don't have all the facts, when you don't know all the stuff that a person is on, like when you find out later you did this, like, I mean, like I said, like, just like the end of last
when
year.
When I found out I had HIV, that was it. That's all. I don't need to know no more facts. And, darling, I want you to hold that, because when I come back, I'm not even going to stay long. I'm just going to take 3 minutes of your time. I must play this song because of what you're talking about. Listen to this song, and I'm coming straight back.
Amen.
Between love and hate, she gon' woman in the world could be the meanest woman in the world.
If you make her that way,
you keep her, she keep being quiet. She might be holding something inside that'll really, really hurt you one day. Here I am laid in the hospital, bandaged from feet to head, in a state of shock, just that much from being dead. I didn't think a woman would do something like this to me. The girl had the nerve. Here I am. I guess action speaks louder than words.
It's a thin line between love and hate.
Don't think you can keep treating your woman.
Had to take us back into time. That song was called A Thin Line Between Love and Hate by the Persuaders. And I just had to play it, Darlene, because the whole conversation, even when you went and picked him up and the lady and him was talking, and inside your mind you knew he had cheated but you couldn't say nothing. I applaud you, my sister, for having that kind of patience, you know, because I obviously don't have it. You know, and I'm glad that God is using you to teach other people, you know, what to do if they get caught up in your situation, because there's other things to do except, you know, possibly go to jail, because I would be the first candidate for that. But I thank you for telling that story. But, Darlene, there was something else that you wanted to share. You know, you said you hope you have time. I'm going to give you that time now, because we got like 22 minutes on the clock and we're winding down. So what it is that you wanted to share?
Well, I'll first tell the end of the story with the when he was caught with the little boy. So I told her that he had HIV, and then about 2 or 3 days later she called me back again and she said, well, he told me that you were lying and that you were just saying that to break us up. And
I said,
sweetie, I said, one, you can have them. And I said, but this is my advice to you. I said, you need to wait about 6 months. And I said, you need to get yourself tested. And I said, and you will find out which one of us are lying. And then I left again. So that's one. I never finished that one. That's just one incident out of many. When he was caught. The other thing I want, and I might have said this in the beginning, but I just can't remember. I apologize. Is that when we hear stories of pastors cheating, the first thing we say is, all of them do it. No, they don't. We have some wonderful, faithful men and women of God all over this world who are faithfully serving and doing what it is that God has called them to do. So
amen.
I don't
That's
want anybody
true.
To hear this story and then lump all of us into the same category, because we all are, you know, it's the small few that is doing something for self, that's self-serving, that's self-centered.
Mm-hmm.
My husband was a sociopath. I believe at this point now, the more I hear and the more people continue to tell me and the stories that I hear about things that he has done, I began to understand that not only was he a sociopath, but he was, he might have just mentally this disease, having this disease. I think everybody handles it differently, and it might have been so much or too much for him to the point where, yes, it seems like now he did take the approach that, well, I'm going to infect as many people as I can before I leave here. That may have been his
feeling. He did take that approach.
And yes, well, he clearly took that approach, because if you never stop until the day you leave here, then you're taking that approach.
Yeah.
So
that's
so
like the point I made earlier.
You know,
a lot of people do that when you find out because they're mad and they're angry and want to make everybody else as messed up as them.
But because he took that approach, we're not all taking that approach. There are people who take the approach that, yes, I have this disease. Now what am I going to do about it? Am I going to educate others or am I going to hurt others? And there are many of us who have chosen to be educators as opposed to being offenders and abusers and hurting other people. So from an education standpoint, there are several things that I've learned that I'd like to share. And one of the things that I've learned in speaking and in speaking with other people is that we have this stigma which has to stop because the stigma really should be in reverse. And not saying that we, those of us with HIV, I'm suggesting to anyone, let's start stigmatizing society. But if anybody should, it actually should be reversed. So now you look at HIV, which is basically a suppression of your immune system. So your immune system is weakened, and you're no longer able to fight off the most common things, colds, things that we know are airborne. HIV is not an airborne virus. You cannot get it from cups, plates, spoons, forks, toilets, countertops, hugs, kisses, holding hands. There's no way you can get it. Now, you are intelligent, ladies and gentlemen. You know that you can get the flu. Someone cough, sneeze in their hands, and they have the flu, and then they shake your hands, and then you turn around, touch, rub your eyes, touch your nose,
right.
Touch your mouth. Flu can be passed. Someone has a cold. Same thing. Cold can be passed. So we know of the things that are airborne. This is not an airborne virus. I'm the one with a weakened immune system. So now this comes to me one day. I'm in this room. I'm speaking. There's about 200 and something people, and I'm speaking. And usually at the end, it's flu season, and I did have my flu shot at this point. But, you know, so sometimes they have you get a flu shot, and then you next thing you know, you hear on the news that the flu shot that they gave out was not the strand of flu that's going around. So I'm looking at all these people, and I'm thinking it's over. All these people are going to come down, and they're going to shake my hand. I don't know who has a flu. I don't know who has a cold. I don't know who has anything. So if anything, people, instead of stigmatizing people with HIV and saying, oh, don't go get near those people, don't use their plate, their fork, or go into their house, you should be saying, no, I have to make sure that I am not doing anything to hurt them. If I have the flu, I'm not going to come over your house or bring the flu to church because I know there are people in my congregation who have HIV. So I'm not going to come to church with pneumonia, with the flu, with a severe cold. I'm not going. And if I do, I'm going to make sure I continuously wash my hands so that I don't pass these germs on to other people because I have an immune system. I can fight them off. She can't. So,
Darlene,
it's like,
let me ask you a question. Let me stop you right there. Did you say that you had some people in your congregation that has HIV, or you were just giving an example?
No, I'm giving an example, you know,
okay.
Because I work now with several agencies, and one of the things that we're doing with the agencies that I'm with, we're trying to get the faith community more involved with people who are living with HIV and AIDS so that this stigma can be stopped. There are people who don't want to go to churches because of the way they're treated. When we were commanded, now, you know, Jesus didn't just ask us. He said a new command. So when you've been commanded, if we say we belong to Christ and we're walking with Christ and he has commanded us to love one another, we can't just take our sisters and brothers and just, like, throw them to the side of the road like they're a piece of dirt and they mean nothing. We have
to
love them.
But let me ask you this question. Okay, I know that HIV is a problem with the T cells, and I know that, you know, HIV is sexually transmitted and saliva-based. Now, hypothetically, you are 54, And anybody who have seen her know you are very attractive. Now, just suppose that Quasar's kept, you know how a lot of these guys, you know, they want to be all alpha male and stuff. Just suppose somebody has been watching you from a distance because they think you're a little cutie, and she is, and they came up to you and just turned you around and put a wet one on your lips. I mean, what do you do? Do you try to push it back before it's too late? Or do you immediately say, oh, no, I have HIV? I mean, because there are some guys, because I have known guys who try to be cute. They try to grab you, want to kiss on you. So maybe you haven't ran into that, but I have. So what do you do in that circumstance?
Well, first of all, there's such a small percentage of virus that is able to live in saliva that there's almost a 0% chance of you getting HIV from someone just kissing you. So someone kissing you, no. If somebody, first of all, I hope no random person doesn't just walk up to me and flip me around and kiss me.
So
please,
woman.
Don't even speak that into existence.
Don't whip a wet one.
Please don't speak that. Because I'd be more afraid of the fact that they have a flu, like I said, or a cold, or something airborne that you could get from kissing, as opposed to HIV, which you can't get from kissing, because they've already proven that there's just such a small percentage of the virus in your saliva that no, you can't get it from kissing. So it's an exchange of bodily fluids. So it has to be an exchange of blood or an exchange of semen, exchange of bodily fluids. So there has to be some actual contact without us going into specifics for that exchange of bodily fluids to occur. We know our blood supply in the United States, I feel pretty safe based on in 1991, my blood, you know, being flagged. I feel pretty safe with the blood supply in the United States. I don't believe the blood supply in the United States is tested. So transfusions, I don't think that there is a way today that people are going to get infected through a transfusion. So the main way that people are being infected today is sex and using sharing needles. Because you have injected something directly into your blood. The blood is on the needle. That person then takes the needle, stick it in themselves. You have then injected into your body, into your bloodstream, blood from another individual. And that's what has to be, an exchange of bodily fluids.
Yeah, darling. And
which doesn't
too,
come with casual contact.
People need to have gloves when they go to an accident scene. And even if you are a good Samaritan and you stop by and someone's in an accident, don't always want to jump up in there and try to do CPR and help and stuff like that when you see blood, because you don't know this person's unconscious, you know. So you got to, you know, even have a first aid kit in your car, put some gloves on, but got to be aware, you know. All it takes is a little opening in your skin, a scratch or something, you know, and you touch somebody's blood and it gets into that little scratch, you know. There it is.
But I have a quick question, well, a statement. I'm all for the being aware of with germs you carry around. Like I said, I do have one of my best friends who is HIV positive. Like I said, she's been HIV positive for over 10 years now, and we are very cautious about how we entertain in her circle, just to keep her healthy and everything. Even though, I mean, she lives a full life. She got married again and everything after having HIV, and she lives a happy and full life. But my thing is, now I see, I'm going to turn the table a little bit. I see a lot of people who I know who have HIV. I don't treat anybody differently. I already know. I grew up in the medical, you know, my father was in the medical profession. My mother was in the medical profession, and everybody, my grandmother, everybody was in the medical profession. So I'm really well-versed on HIV patients and what their needs are, especially when it comes to their immune system. But let me stop rambling. But what I wanted to say is a whole lot of people that have HIV tend to think that the people that don't always stigmatize them. You know, a whole lot of you all, we don't know that you have HIV because you haven't let us know. Like you said, you didn't even tell your family. So we can't be as cautious as we need to be around you because you haven't alerted us that we need to be as cautious as we need to be. You know, it's just like with a newborn baby, how you would, you know, shelter them when they first come home. No, you don't want certain people to hold them. Oh, you got to wear this gown and wear these gloves and put this mask on, things like that. If we're not alert, then how would we be able to protect you or help you protect you, you know? So the whole, a lot of the stigmatism comes from HIV people, people with HIV. I'm not going to say HIV people. People with HIV having their own stigmatism on themselves.
Okay, so let's answer that in a couple ways. When I said I didn't tell my family knew about my HIV status early on in the early 90s. I did not tell them initially, but I did tell them in the early 90s, probably months, within a year, I would say, of me testing positive, so that my family did know since the beginning. When I said I didn't tell my family, I didn't tell my family all the things my husband was saying and doing, because I knew my family would come after my husband if I had told them the things my husband was saying and doing. So that's what I meant when I said I didn't tell my family. I'm not talking about telling my family about HIV. That they knew. And my mother was one of my biggest supporters, and all of my sisters and brothers. They have all been just absolute biggest supporters of mine and protectors of mine. And my children, in addition to my children, everyone in my circle of family and friends are just big supporters and big protectors. Now, when I say stigma, I'm talking about people who do know that someone is HIV positive. And I'll give you a couple examples. I speak a lot. I go to different schools and places speaking, and I speak with other people. So other people, sadly, have to tell stories. My family didn't do this to me, and I thank God of the wonderful mother that I had. My mother passed away. But we have people that I speak with whose family members do not allow them to eat off of the plates and knives and forks and spoons and use the dishes in their home. When they come to their home, they have to use paper products because they know they're HIV positive and they're afraid to allow them to use their dishes. So they make them use paper plates, paper cups, plastic forks and knives. They bleach down the counters or anything that they've touched. They make them use bleach in the showers and bleach on the toilets and bleach in the bathrooms. So these are people, family members, this is our family and friends, who know that we are HIV positive and do this to us. Now, my family does not do this to me, but I speak with a lot of people, so I know that we have family out there. So if you're a family member out there and you're doing this to one of your other family members or one of your friends, or you've stopped inviting people over your home because you are afraid that something's going to come in your home just by someone walking into your home, you're doing that in ignorance. Hosea 4:6, my people perish for lack of knowledge. I'm just trying to share some knowledge about the disease. You know about the disease, and you know the ways that you can and cannot contract it. You have a friend that you're supporting and you're helping. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who do not know a lot about the disease because we really haven't taken the time to educate ourselves. Because I was in a meeting just this week, and a young lady said to me, she said, well, I came to the meeting because I wanted to know we're going to be out and we're going to be evangelizing to people. And, you know, before we started shaking people's hands and giving people hugs and hugging people, I wanted to know more about the disease. Well, I thank God for her because, one, she took the time to come to the meeting to get educated. But I was able to say to her, listen, you can't get it from holding somebody's hand or giving someone a hug. That's not how this disease contracted. I said, but if your ministry is going out, I share the same thing that I share with you. If you have anybody on the ministry team that has the flu or have a cold, ask them to stay home. Because if you know specifically that you're going out to ministering in communities or at shelters or at places where people with HIV are living, don't bring any of the outside viruses in that can hurt them. And she said, you know, I never looked at it like that. She took the time to get educated. So that's what I'm talking about, people who do know, not people who do not know. Because, right, what you're saying is, if I don't tell you, you don't know. But in my case, everybody who knows me know, because that's all I talk about. That's my life. I'm a speaker, and I always will be. I'm going to speak out, and I'm going to talk about it. You know,
well,
so I'll sit down on a bus and talk to a stranger.
Okay, well, darling, other people need to know as well that if you think you might be infected, there has a test out that you can take. You swab the inside of your cheek and let you know instantly whether or not you got HIV. So now what they do at the hospital is you can do it in the privacy of your home, go to the pharmacist and get a test for HIV. You can swab inside of your mouth, and you will know within 20 minutes whether you're infected. And,
yes, you can't buy them over the counter.
Exactly. And we got to get ready to get up out of here. Darlene, is there anything you would like to say before we go?
I want to say thank you, ladies, for inviting me. Thank you to your guests that came on the line. Was that Tony there in the background?
Tony was one, and then there
Tony,
was another lady.
Okay,
Gail.
Well, Tony, it sounded like we left Tony speechless, so I want to apologize to Tony for leaving Tony speechless. And this one here is just
here
for Tony.
Tony,
because,
are you still there, darling?
Yeah, I'm still
well, there. Tony, this is just one for you. This is one of his lines that he gave when he came home after being caught in the strip club. We just want all the fellas to know this line doesn't work, because when my kids heard about this line, even my kids said, Mom, I can't even believe that you stayed with him after that. So even my kids, now that they're adults, they were like you're saying, you know, like, Mom, are you crazy? You know, how vulnerable could you have been? But his reason for being in the strip club, Tony, was that he was there because he's an undercover agent for the FBI and the DEA, and they sent him in because he had street cred, because his friend was a cop, and his friend couldn't go in because he could be identified. So his friend asked him if he could go in. Okay? So don't use that line, or you will lose your girl.
Yeah, so
maybe
I'm saying,
I wouldn't lose that. This boy just had
some words for you that really slow you, and it just messed with me.
He's in love.
When I hear people go through stuff such as you go through, and then it seems like you just want to just put up with it, I don't say that, because I don't think nobody should put up with anything, not unless they want to put up with it. And things only happen to you that you let happen to you. So I
agree with you. Thank you, Tony, and you're right, 100%. Yeah. But one thing that I do is I thank God for the scales being removed from my eyes. Not that I want someone to physically abuse me, but it took that physical kick to occur, physically being kicked by him and physically – him saying, mouthing the words to me, I married beneath me. And, Tony, you can believe at that instant the scales were removed from my eyes. I felt like scales were literally removed from my eyes, and it was like a vision that was clearer than any vision that had occurred over the entire 12 years. And I could see. I could see more than I could ever see in the past. And that's the day I knew it was done. And that was September 5th, 2003. And, of course, it was done since then, and it was done until the day he passed. And
well,
it's still done.
A lot of feedback, darling.
Hmm?
From getting a lot of feedback. I don't know where it's coming from, but you're right. We need to educate people. And this has been a show that has enlightened a lot of people, I'm sure. But what I would like to say is if you don't know, go find out. It's too easy now. It's across the counter. There's a test. You know, if you had sex with somebody that ain't your main person, if you're, then you need to check it out. You know, if you had a one-night stand, you need to check it out. If you just had somebody up in your ear and it just clicked and it was the atmosphere was right, you need to check it out, because one-night stands are getting a little more dangerous than normal. But with that being said, I'm going to let my co-host say her last words, and then I'll say my last words, and we've got to get up out of here.
Thank you so much, ladies, for having me.
You're welcome. I just want to thank you, Ms. Darlene, for sharing your story with us tonight. It's always hard when you have to be critiqued, especially by strangers, and you took a great
mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. I just want to thank everybody for being patient with me. I know I've been through a lot this last couple of weeks, but I'm back. Miss Terry, I'm back. I want to thank Miss Terry also for her prayers, because I know she was praying
Amen.
For me.
Prayers changes
things. I was going through it. It does definitely change things.
Yeah, and before we go, I want to say thank my mom for tuning in, and one of my best friends at church, Lillian Holt, for tuning in. And I see Brother Alexander for tuning in and supporting his sister. That's what I'm talking about. Anytime the preacher can get on the line and listen in, that's what I'm talking about. And I just thank you, Darlene, for spending that time on Friday, the day that people go out and hang out, you know, for sharing and uplifting and encouraging people, because you have shown me that I need more patience, more tolerance, because had it had been me, like I said, y'all had to get a carton of cigarettes, come bring him to jail, because I'm going to bust him square up in his head to the white meat. You know, my heart and forgiveness ain't that big, and as quiet as kept, that's what I would have done. And Shalonda, I would be calling you on the phone, girlfriend, I just started smoking cigarettes again. Help, you know.
Right.
But, Terry, you also know vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. It's in his hands. I have no control over it.
I know that's right. And I need to learn to work on my patience, because I know that, and I probably would have took it in my own hands, which is not right. But like I said, this has been a great show. Thanks for sharing and uplifting. Is there anywhere they can reach you for any upcoming events that you got going on, Darlene?
My email is my name, darlingking13@hotmail.com. And I am on Facebook under Darlene King, and you can also search Darlene King University City High, and I'll pop up. It's me with my daughter who just recently graduated. Thank God I'm alive to see it. Didn't think I would. And I'm also going to be on WMEL 104.1 DJ Mel Entertainment Radio on Sundays, Eastern Standard Time, 3 to 5 with a gospel show, and I'm looking forward to that. We're going to start not this Sunday, but the following Sunday, and I'm just blessed. I'm blessed, and I'm just thankful to be here to see all that I never thought that I can see, because my eyes truly have seen and ears have heard abundantly more than I ever thought I would. So
the
non-month-old baby and that 5-year-old baby is now 24-year-old babies and 28-year-old babies, so I can't do nothing but praise them.
All right. Well, thank God that you're out there uplifting and sharing information about HIV awareness, and I'm glad that you're also sharing God in your message. And with that being said, we got to get up out of here with Charlie Wilson. There goes my baby.
Pull up at the mall, couldn't find a place to park. Threw my keys to the valet.
Hand that for me.
I was only about to hang, wasn't looking for a thing. I was just about to bounce, and then I saw Miss Lady. Then I said to myself, pretty little thing, a couple of bags in her hand, right in front of Macy's.
That's where a pretty girl's hand.
Then I saw her at the food court, sipping lemonade, conversating on her cell phone.
Look
looking so amazing. And I said to myself, take her to the cookout.
Yeah, her gon'
hang. Take her to my mama's house. If she need a hair done,
if my cousin can,
I'll treat her like a queen. Give her everything.
She will be my girl till we all in grave.
And I knew it from the moment that I saw her lovely, lovely. So crazy, crazy, crazy. It's blowing my mind that you give me some of your time.
Well, that's the wrap for another episode of Unmask. If you missed this episode or any other one, just go to the archives and listen in. Pick one at random. And if you want to get a hold of Darlene King, you can hit her up on Facebook or listen to her every Sunday at 3 to 5 on the WMEL 104.1 FM station. And we're out of here. Good night, Shalonda.
Good night, Miss Terry. Good night, everybody. Have a safe weekend.
Let's do it again next week.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.